Hello and welcome to the new edition of the Now Spinning Magazine video podcast. And in this episode, I'm absolutely delighted to say I have Amanda Lehman with me, who's going to talk about her latest album and how she became involved in music. And also, as I've recently done a review of Amanda's album, and quite a few members have actually emailed me and said you've gone ahead and bought it, which is fantastic. And you pointed out to me how heavily involved Amanda was with Steve Hackett and still is, because one of the things, of course, Amanda, I realised when I was listening to the album just this morning, is that many of the members of the band are actually from Steve Hackett's band himself. But first of all, before we start, I'd like to know how you started, how you became involved in music.
Okay, well, and first of all, lovely to be chatting to you, so thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome.
Going back to when I was little, my dad played the violin, so I was always kind of surrounded by music, and quite a lot of classical music was played in the household at that time. That was sort of the main music that I grew up with when I was small, which was lovely because I love classical music. It's just so all-encompassing, and it fires the imagination. And so a mixture of that and dad playing the violin was just wonderful. And it was sort of just a musical household. And from a very early age, I just kind of wanted to play any sort of music I could, you know. If I was at school, I would sing or play the recorder or whatever. And the piano was the first instrument I played. I was really, really keen to get a piano. You kind of got everything there with a piano. And it's so sort of logically laid out, and I was desperate to have one. And my parents did get me a secondhand piano, and I was so pleased to learn that. And I had lessons.
Yeah.
So that was sort of, that took me on to the next stage, which was, as well as playing the piano, I really, really wanted to play the guitar. I was by that time starting to get into different sorts of music, including bands like Genesis, which I'd heard, I was starting to get, I was aware of like the Beatles earlier, you know, before that. So I was becoming aware of all sorts of different sorts of music. And I got a little old acoustic guitar and started strumming away on that. And that was very much all self-taught. The piano was much more sort of a classical sort of proper progression. And the guitar, yeah, I was just sort of picking up things from people and just teaching sort of myself, learning things. And as I got to be a teenager, I was into I got into a lot of rock music as well as prog rock. That led on to wanting an electric guitar and learning to play lead and some power chords and nice kind of like damped sort of guitar, learning to control that distortion, which was a challenge, but very exciting. And I started playing in bands, picking up all sorts of bits of music again from people I knew, other musicians. So that was a real learning curve. And singing and playing guitar with bands, and form my own band, started writing music. So that took me sort of through my teens and 20s, really just touring all over the country. I lived on the south coast at the time of England, and we just sort of took the band anywhere, sort of thing, anywhere that we could get into. And so I was probably playing several times a week in my band and duos and whatever, sort of earned money as well. So I've always been really, really active with music. It's always been my sort of my love. I've always written music. So it's been a busy, busy music time over the years. I took a bit of a lull at the time that my son was born. I was a single mum, so I had to obviously spend all my time looking after him, and it kind of everything kind of got very interrupted around that time musically. But that was fine. It's all just sits there waiting, and I think life has its twists and turns, and they're all for the good. They will make you a more sort of multi-dimensional person. That's my kind of musical history up until the bit that people sort of probably know a bit better.
Which is when you arrived on the same stage as Steve Hackett.
Yes.
And is that where you found your direction for the, I mean, you were with, you still are connected to Steve Hackett, but did that kind of form your idea and your vision of the album that you're now promoting?
It certainly contributed to that, because a couple of the, two or three of the songs that are on the album, I actually wrote the original sort of versions of those many, many years ago, you know, long before I was involved with Steve and the band. So there was already music in the making anyway, sort of, and I'd done a couple of sort of, I'd done a duo album and a little solo EP. So I'd sort of done some recording and writing sort of prior to that anyway. So really, I think that playing with any group of musicians, as I've done throughout my whole life, is a huge influence, because you're just soaking up other people's ideas as well as expanding your own. So it's fantastic. And certainly playing with Steve and his band, they are all exceptional musicians. And I learned a lot playing with them, and I still am, you know, because I still guest on some of the shows, and there's new stuff to play, or I'll do some vocals on Steve's album, and there's always more to learn. I think that I learned, I would say, the whole progressive rock aspect. I got a deeper understanding of a lot of the building blocks of that, and how it's put together and orchestrated. So yes, I think that really did develop some of those strands that I already was using. It's been and still is fascinating.
Fantastic. Well, I want to move straight on to your new album, because I think that's what everyone wants to know about. And I've been playing this a hell of a lot. When did you start to work on this album? When did you start to pull it together?
I started to pull it together in the around about the summer of 2019 was when I first started recording it. So I guess the actual album itself took a couple of years. I recorded two tracks, Memory Lane and Only Happy When It Rains. I recorded those with Roger King because we had done some gigs, some like acoustic gigs with Steve and Rob Townsend and John Hackett. And I'd done a couple of my own songs, those two songs at that gig. So everybody kind of played it. So it seemed a really good place to start. Let's get these recorded. So that was the beginning of it. And that was a commitment to write, I am going to do this album now, because I've been wanting to do this album for so many years and kept putting it on the back burner because other things were coming up or I was touring or blah, 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 blah. So I prioritized it. And then the next sort of progression was during the lockdown time at the beginning of 2020. And I was interacting a lot with Nick Magnus with his keyboard and production skills. Yeah. We get on so well. I'd done some vocals on a previous album of his, Catharsis, and we worked really, really well together. So I'd love Nick to do something on one of my songs, and the song I picked was Tinkerbell. And so I sort of gave him all my vocal and guitar tracks and this is how it goes sort of thing, and said, could you do something really kind of exciting for the instrumental on that? And gave him some sort of free rein on that, with a sort of gave him the idea of what I was looking for. And what came back was exactly what I'd wanted. I was so, so pleased with it. So sort of from then on, Nick and I continued that working relationship as well, which really, really worked well. Sort of just all done remotely. So I'd do my stuff in my studio and send it all to him. And it worked well.
I absolutely love that track. That's the second track in, isn't Tinkerbell? And at the start of it, it reminds me a bit of Blackmore's Night. It's kind of got that kind of feel to me. And it's got a very kind of fairy tale, children's story type feel. But what I really like, because you just mentioned Nick's arrangements and his orchestral stuff, is it reminds me of the composer Danny Elfman and his soundtracks. It's got a very kind of, Danny Elfman does the things like A Nightmare Before Christmas and all those kind of animated films.
That kind of
feel to it's really like a film soundtrack, isn't it? But it's that Danny Elfman type sound to me. I absolutely loved it. Absolutely, I think it's a great track.
Thank you.
And but just roll back to the first one, because Who Are the Heroes, which is almost like your statement of intent, because it's like this one of two almost 7-minute long prog epics. And it's just so full on. There's so much going on in that. Again, very cinematic in its approach, but this is through instrumentation of your marvellous keyboard playing and guitar playing. And obviously, you've got, as you've mentioned, you've got Nick Magnus working on the arrangements, Roger King and Rob Townsend, all from Steve's band. Did that help? Because you knew the musicians so well, did it help you get your vision together when you recorded that song, or all the songs, really?
Well, that song that was only Nick Magnus on that tune. I sort of had people in mind, I guess, when I did write certain songs, and other times I didn't. It depended, really. I think that the one that Steve played on, Forever Days, I had him in mind for that, so I wrote that with his guitar in mind.
Yeah.
Whereas Who Are the Heroes, I wrote very much for what I had in mind. I don't know that one... I particularly had any sort of agenda with that one.
Did you write that with on keyboard or guitar first? Because it's so, as you said, you had that in mind. Yeah. So could you see it in your mind what you wanted to achieve with that? So was that written on guitar or keyboards or?
It was both.
Was both.
Yes. Yeah. Some of it was. Yeah. Some of it was the guitar. And then, some of it was keys. It depended on what I was trying to work out. I find that guitar is very accessible, and also putting vocals over, I find it easier to sing with a guitar than with a keyboard. However, dealing with more intricate music, and certainly where there's a different bass line, or, so you need those two hands, as it were. I find a lot easier on the keyboard, and I also was able to put down some rudimentary kind of drum ideas, bass ideas on there as well, because what I wanted to do was to get the whole thing together and before I sent it to Nick, so that he knew exactly where I was going with this, because it's quite a complex song and there's a lot in it. So I didn't want to send him a whole bunch of bits and bobs and just say, sort that out, because I kind of wanted to knit it all together and make it work first, and then pass it over to Nick, and then he's free to kind of create ideas around it that will fit with what I've got in my mind, but also, obviously add his own creative input to it as well. I think that one very much was one that I created sort of myself over a long period of time.
Yeah, it's an absolutely epic, as a cinematic, progtastic track. It really is fantastic, and it sets the tone for the album. But then again, what I love about the album is the fact that there's so many different things on the menu, so to speak, because you think, oh, well, I know what will happen next when you have Tinkerbell. And then the third track in is Only Happy When It Rains, which is like a late night jazz feel, which is totally different feel again. But of course, you've got Steve Hackett playing harmonica on this. It's got a nice jazz feel. Was this something, again, you were thinking when you put the album together, you wanted it to be like a mixture of styles?
I think that I tend to love to play lots of different music anyway. I get kind of, I'll hear something or think of something or diddle something on the guitar and it's like, oh, I like that. And I do, so I don't, I never do restrict it anyway to a certain genre. And actually I was a little bit concerned when I did this album thinking, is it too diverse? Are people going to complain? So, oh, I don't know. That's a bit, you know, what is it sort of thing. Fortunately, that hasn't happened. Everybody's embraced it and really liked it. And I think that there's enough in the album that is kind of my influence throughout that it doesn't sound too different. And I was very mindful of that and thinking I need to make sure these tracks do work together. Because as you say, Only Happy When It Rains is very different. It's yes, you've had the first two and you're sort of thinking kind of prog. And then suddenly this completely different track turns up. It's like, oh, what's that?
But that's true. But I guess with the idea of progressive music or prog, as people call it, the idea is that whatever happens next should be a challenge or should not be expected. You know that's the thing. And also, as you are, you're multi-instrumentalist, that it's not just, you know, guitar and it's not just keyboards. Your voice is another instrument that needs to be, you know, for you to represent yourself. And I think that jazzy track shows a different side. The next track in is The Watcher, which is probably my favorite track now. It was the opening track, but I think it's this one. Because I do play this the most. And at the beginning, the guitar style reminds me a little bit of Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits.
Yes.
And the vocals are almost like a string section. I just love the production. I just love the way it's arranged. But I have to say, the guitar solo at about the 4-minute mark is just sublime.
Thank you. It
takes it to a totally different level. So when you did that solo, because it's epic, did you do that in one take? Did you practice it? Was it almost written in your mind what you were going to do?
It's interesting this, because I did, this is one of the songs that I wrote a long time ago. So we're going back into sort of like early 90s when I actually originally wrote the song. But it's gone through different it's gone through changes since, but nothing major. But the guitar solo, I did a fresh approach on it this time. I thought, no, I'm not going to play what I used to play. I'm going to come up with something really different. And so I did work on it quite a bit. I tried out different things. I wanted something that was melodic, but a bit exciting as well as just sort of wavy and building. I wanted it a bit edgy, because the whole feeling of The Watcher is that you're trying to break out all the time. So it wants to fly, it wants to be free. And the watcher is going and pushing it down, whatever it is, whether it's the person or whatever the watcher means to you.
Yeah.
And so, yes, with that guitar, I did plan it quite carefully. And I wanted to kind of wring it out as much as possible. So I would do quite a few that were all one take. But then I would extract bits I liked out of them and then replay them. And just, it's like kind of molding something really out of clay, and sort of gradually it comes together
Fantastic. Now this might seem an odd question, but because when in bands you'll have like sometimes the vocalist and the guitarist work together and they work out what each other are trying to interpret each other, so as the vocals sings the lyrics and the style of the song, the guitarist kind of mirrors that or tries to get inside the head of the vocalist to see what's happening. Now you are both, so when you were singing this song and you're putting your emotion and feelings into it and what you can see, when you did the solo, do you see you as the guitarist as a separate voice or a musical version of your vocal voice, if that made sense?
That's a really interesting question. That's quite fascinating. I haven't thought about that before. That's really interesting. If you think almost like two people, is it two people, is it one person?
It's a different way of expressing the idea, but from the same person, because Because yeah, I just wondered as I was listening to it this morning, I thought, you know, because the guitar solo works so well with the way that the vocals are delivered. You know, did you, you know, are the two connected?
I think they are, because I was trying to express something with the guitar, and I was trying to express in the same way as the vocal. In a way, I suppose you could say the guitar is a second vocal part, because the vocals are very much about being restrained. The vocals are quite held back and edgy. The guitar is really trying to fly. So the guitar, I think, takes over from the voice to be the one that's trying to fly. It's like it's got
its wings
and it's really trying to fly. So it's almost like one person is saying to the other, you go for it. See if you can break out. Is that kind of feeling.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And again, it's another track. As it moves towards the end, it could again be in a film. You know, I could just do, you know, just, and in fact, your video to this track is looks like a clip or a trailer from a major film. So it's, you know, works really, really well.
Yes. Yeah, now, very thematic.
The next one, Memory Lane, I think this is a beautiful song. And I just said that The Watcher was my favourite track. I think this is in my top three, definitely. The lyrics send shivers down my spine, really. And the last verse is, it in the land of the lost, I'll take you down memory lane to a wood bursting with bluebells, a walk through the park in the rain. There's so much that you still wanted to do, but the universe had other plans. So we'll do it all that we can again and again. I just think that is... I think that's beautiful. What was the inspiration behind this song?
The inspiration behind the song was my mum and her battle with dementia. So it was a very heartfelt song, and one that I wrote over a period of time. It was very cathartic to write it. It helped. I didn't sort of plan on writing it. I just drove home one day after seeing her and felt really emotional and pulled over and just wrote some things down. And it started from that. Basically just all sorts of different aspects of that whole journey, how it feels for the person, how it feels to be on the other side. So there is a sort of a two-way thing about how it is for them and how it feels being on the other side of that. And I wanted very much, as the song developed, I wanted it to be something to share with other people who were having the same or similar experience, however that would be for them. We're all different. Everything's different for everybody. But I think that it has worked that way. People have responded really, really well to this track, and it's I think been quite helpful for a lot of people who have been affected by this horrible disease which is so prevalent at the moment. It's a special song.
I didn't want to presume that that was the subject matter, but that's what I thought it was, because my mom sadly passed away from dementia.
Oh, sorry.
I think the song works on that level, and yeah. I think it's a great comfort, and I think it's a song, as you say, you did it so that people could share it, and I think it's a way of bringing the subject up in a very, as you say, you're talking from both sides. And I also love the video, because the way that you kind of fade in and out of the walk through the woods.
Yes.
Because I understand what you kind of put across there.
Trying to,
that you walk, you know, your mom. Yeah, your mom walking, you know, might have walked in that same path, and she's now gone. And you say in the memory moving like my mom did. One minute she was okay, then she wasn't.
Yeah.
So I think it's a very, very important song, and I think it really put the album on a different level to me. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful song.
Thank you.
And then we move on to Forever Days, where Steve Hackett arrives with his big guitar. And this is probably the heaviest track on the album, is what it is.
Yeah.
It's very up tempo, very uplifting. And so what was it like recording this? Were you there when Steve was laying down his tremolo arm guitar solo.
No, I wasn't. So again, it was all remote. He had heard it and we'd talked about it, and I said, you know, what I want, you can have this solo and this one, and gave him some, you know, ideas of what I want. It was quite interesting because I think that generally he kind of likes to be left alone to do what he wants to do. Mm-hmm. But he was very good about this. He did actually take on board what I was asking him to do. And I'd already laid down my guitar parts as well. So we did some twin guitar, and it was, he did go away and think about it. And so what he recorded was very, very much what I had in mind. I was pleased as punch with it. But he went round to Nick Magnus's and recorded it round there.
Oh, right.
We don't live too far apart. He went there and put the tracks down, and then they sent it to me. Said, what do you think of that? And I was like, yes, I'm very, very pleased with this. This is lovely. This is just what I wanted. So it was great, but it was very strange. Yeah, we weren't able to actually thrash it out properly ourselves.
Yeah, it's amazing really how many albums during the lockdown were recorded in this way, but you wouldn't know. You wouldn't have a clue at all that you know people weren't in the same room.
Yeah.
And the next song is We Are One, and this was originally recorded for the Harmony of Elephants CD. And I can tell that this is a really heartfelt song as well. How did this one come about? What's the story behind that?
This one I originally wrote for a charity CD that was a compilation with all sorts of different musicians and all sorts of different compositions for an elephant charity, Elephants for Africa, I think, if my memory serves me right, which was a wonderful project with a beautiful photo book that was done by Leslie Wood, and it, absolutely gorgeous photographs in it. So it was a real big charity project, and everybody kind of did their take on elephants. So We Are One was about the herd of elephants, and that was the whole idea of it. And as you've probably seen, the little elephants on one of the rocks on the cover, so they feature. And I wanted to use that on this album. I did redo, I changed some of it because I thought, some people already have this version, so I feel that I really ought to sort of redo it. So I redid the vocals and added some different bits of guitar in there just to make it a little bit different. And I did think, how does this fit in with the whole of the album, because of the whole sort of thread of the album, the journey, the childhood quality? But it's interesting because some people have heard We Are One have actually almost said it's like about humanity. And so it's a kind of, again, it's a song that can be interpreted in different ways. And I think that if you think about elephants and how they are as a herd and how they are together, in a way, I think they represent the best of people, how people can be. It almost links with Who Are the Heroes, you know, that there are, you know, people can be really pretty bad news, but also can be incredibly amazing as well. And I think that We Are One is a kind of, it's a song of hope. Where you've got Forever Days, which is all about the kind of the ups and downs of the sort of teenage type of years and all the sort of the hopes and the possibilities. And I think that We Are One again has that plaintive sort of feeling of hope to it. Just plodding on and into the future in a way. So I think that it fits in rather nicely.
Yeah, I really like it. I could hear elements of Kate Bush in some of the harmony vocals. And I love the guitar towards the end. It felt to me like this song could have gone on for another 2 or 3 minutes. So I think it'd be fantastic live.
Yes,
I could just imagine it building up and, you know, and the guitar solo going on for as long as you wanted it to go on for, really.
Yes.
It's that kind of song. It's fantastic. Okay. And then we're back to a kind of almost smooth jazzy feel of the third track with Childhood Delusions. And this is the song that inspired the title of the album, I guess. Is that right? Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it is, because it's got the album title in it.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's got Innocence and Illusion, Childhood Delusions. The Man in the Moon Still Follows Me Home.
and a lovely sax solo from Rob Townsend as well.
Ah, now that's interesting, actually, in this one.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It's Nick. Nick Magnus.
Oh, is it? Ah, right.
Yes. Yeah, he's a very, very talented guy, is our Nick. He can basically emulate solo instruments, because it's like he kind of understands them. So although he's not actually, you know, sort of blowing the sax, he's playing a beautiful, he's done it all. But he's very clever, because he does all the little, you know, he'll do the breaths, he'll do the sort of little swoops between notes. He's not just sort of playing them. He'll program it in so it sounds really realistic.
It does.
It does. Yeah, very impressive. It's beautiful with what he's done in the middle there. I think that Nick got all of the songs, and this one I think particularly resonated with him. When I composed it on the keyboard, on the piano rather, sent it over to him, and he then sort of added the extra piano in, and then did that beautiful solo.
Yeah.
And these lovely touches of strings that make it really sort of sentimental sounding, which is what I wanted. And he sent it back to me, and I put a load of sort of harmony vocals on it. I sent it back to him, and he said, would you be awfully offended if I suggested we took all the harmony vocals out? I said, well, you know what, Nick, I think you're right. I said, I think they don't need to be there. It's too much, isn't it? And I love all my harmony vocals. I love, you know, everything I do has a whole bunch of vocals in it. But so we stripped them out. And it's very pared down. It's very gentle and it is a very innocent song and a very nostalgic song. And I'm very, very pleased with the way that came out. It's a wonderful song.
And I think the other thing that makes the album, I think, connect together so well is the fact that, although, you know, looking at the album cover, there you are with your, you know, guitar, that you think you form an image, if you think what this is going to be like.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, it's going to be a song, and there'll be a guitar solo in every song, and it'll be, and it's not.
No.
Because you're a multi-instrumentalist, but you're quite happy for this song has got, you know, the sax sound in it, and another song there's no solo, it's different. It's just the songs lead the way. Is that how you see it?
Very much so. Yeah, whatever the song needs, it gets, and whatever it doesn't need, it doesn't have. It doesn't have to have the obligatory guitar solo in it. Absolutely, very much so. It's that they're all very different songs, that different treatments for all of them. They have what they need.
and I think the album ends perfectly with When the Small Things Go, which is your co-written song with Steve Hackett.
Yeah.
And this was arranged by both of you. Were you both in the same room for this?
No, this started off as a little lockdown sketch.
Yeah.
Because I think everybody was kind of like, how are we going to sort of, you know, we can't gig, so we want to put music out there. And I said to Steve on the phone, I said, well, how about you just pop something down, sort of just record it on the iPhone and just send it over, and I'll just stick some vocals on it. That'd be a bit different.
Yeah.
So he did this little piece, just recorded on a phone, sent it over to me, and I did the vocals at my end on my studio. And we just sort of put it together during lockdown.
Wow.
So then, like, when I was doing the album, and I said to Steve, are you happy if I have this on my album? He said, yeah, absolutely. That's fine. You can use that. And so then I sent it over to Nick just to sort of clean up the sound. There it was. So it's a very, although we didn't do it in the same room as such, it was it was a very kind of, it was, I don't know, it was almost like we had it.
That's exactly what it sounds like. But you both sat on each end of a sofa.
That's right. It's that kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely fantastic. Well, it's a brilliant album, Amanda. It really is. And if people want to get hold of it, where would you recommend that they go to buy a copy?
Well, probably the easiest place and that most people remember is you can get it from Burning Shed.
Okay.
But if you want, I have my own web store. You can, if you go to my website, all the information is on there. That's amandalehman.co.uk. And Lehman is spelled L-E-H-M-A-N-N. Funny name.
I'll put the links and the spellings.
Right, I won't bore everyone with that.
They'll be in the description on both the podcast and the website and the YouTube channel. So I'll put Burning Shed in with a link to your album and obviously your website as well. Okay. So as we come out of the pandemic, hopefully, what are your plans? Do you have any plans for playing live and taking this album on the road?
Well, I would love to. I think realistically, I won't quite yet because it is a big logistical exercise. There's a lot of time I'd have to find, you know, everybody to play on it. We'd have to get together and rehearse it. And I don't think that's actually going to happen at the moment because it's just too much time, too much expense. But down the line, it's a possibility. I do love playing live. And I think this, if it was given enough time and commitment, I think this music would work really well.
Oh, gosh, yes, it would.
Live.
Yes, it would.
It would need a lot of orchestration. It would need to be, you know, it's not something you could put together quickly. But I'd love to. I would love to play it live.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the cheeky question to ask would be, do you think if you went on the road or did some gigs with Steve, would he slot one of the songs in from the album, do you think?
Well, he might do. I think the problem is because I'm not sort of full-time touring.
Yeah.
You know, it would be a bit much, I think, to ask him and the whole band to sort of rehearse up stuff, a whole song that they're going to play a few times. So I think that's probably the issue. I wouldn't sort of ask them to do that. But yes, I think if I was touring full time, that would be a possibility. I would think something like Forever Days or something, I think, would probably fit in there quite nicely.
Yeah. Although I'd like to see The Watcher or perhaps We Are One would be.
Yes. The Watcher, I used to do The Watcher live many, many years ago with my own band. So back in the 90s, that used to get. And that was, fun enough, that was one of the favourites at venues we used to get asked to play that. Oh, you're going to play The Watcher. Yes, of course.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, that's Amanda Lehman and Innocence and Illusion, which is a highly recommended album, and I've been playing it absolutely lots, and each time I play it there's more to discover, and I think there's lots of different styles of music on here, lots of different feelings and emotions, and you've got things that are going to make you feel good, hopeful. I think it's an album of hope, and that song Memory Lane, I think it's such an important song because so many people are going through that kind of journey. And I think it's a very brave song, but it's a very hopeful song. And as you say, it's music that shows the different sides of what that's like, you know, really is.
Yeah, thank you.
So thank you very much, Amanda, for being my guest today. I've absolutely enjoyed it. And I look forward to seeing what you get up to next, and please keep us in the loop of whatever you're doing, any new tracks or new gigs, and I'll be happy to let everybody know.
Fantastic. Yeah, thank you, Phil. It's lovely chatting to you.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Now Spinning Magazine podcast with me, Phil Aston. A huge thank you to my guest, Amanda Lehman. And if you want to know more about Amanda and her fantastic new album, Innocence and Illusion, then go to her website, amandalehman.co.uk, or you can buy the CD directly from burningshed.com. Take care, please subscribe, and I'll see you soon.